You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the weekend. It is Friday, January 23rd, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to you non-toking lovers of liberty as well, because our show is not really so much about marijuana as it is about freedom. The freedom of all American adults to use the cannabis that they prefer. Joining us here in the studio today, we've got Wiz Calico. You can hear him coming down because Roscoe, the official dog of 420 Radio, is making sure that he passes our quality inspection checks. Good boy, Roscoe. Good boy. Roscoe, come here, fella. Coming up on today's show, we have got some great information for you. Our guest today on the show is Steve Owens. He's from Adherence Colorado. That is a company that produces software for compliance for medical marijuana facilities and recreational marijuana facilities in the state of Colorado. We'll talk to him about the state of regulations and about the new software. Also on the show today, speaking of regulations, we have got the newest bills from the Oregon legislature. There are 9 of them today that are being dropped in front of the Measure 91 Implementation Committee. We'll talk about the good and the bad from those bills when we get to the Radical Rant segment at the end of the show. Also on the show today, we're going to go behind the headlines where an increase in pot overdoses in Washington and Colorado has been noted by the Associated Press. We're going to take a look at those numbers and explain what the real reason is behind the increase in those numbers. Also, speaking of numbers, in drug war data mining today, there is a study that's been funded by the National Institutes on Drug Abuse on Twitter to find out just how pro or anti-marijuana the messaging is in the leading social media application. The numbers will not surprise any of us who've been working on Twitter in the war on drugs. So check that out coming up in Drug War Data Mining. But all that comes after the 420 Radio News. And in the headlines today, President Obama said he expects more states to experiment with marijuana legalization. We played the video for you yesterday. We'll give you the quotes today in the news. The governor of Colorado says the decision to legalize marijuana was a bad idea, according to his recent performance on CNBC's Squawk Box show. In Hawaii, lawmakers are beginning to introduce a series of bills that would make marijuana more accessible in the island state. And in Virginia, we told you the story of how they're trying to get some medical marijuana laws passed there in Virginia. The young girl who's been testifying on behalf of this to treat her seizures actually had a seizure in the General Assembly while they were discussing the bill. So we'll tell you all about that. And finally, in Adams County, Colorado, which incorporates most of the area north of Denver and east of the airport, received 1,500 applications for 10 licensing spots. We'll give you the details on that in our 420 Radio News coming up next after our first advertising break. And then stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. And we'll talk with Wiz Calico, Calico Castile, who with ColecoVision.com is back from his trip to Hawaii. We'll see if he got to see the lava that's been flowing there recently and what he sees in the Oregon legislature as we move forward for marijuana regulations and legalization here in the Beaver State. It's chock full of information for you to use in the cannabis community. It's the Russ Melville Show, and we're back in just a few minutes. Stick around.
Voice of the Marijuana Nation.
420 Radio, the activist radio station.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belville Show.
Fun.
Oh, hello. I'm Big Daddy, and I want you to join me at the Funky Roller Ring. We're partying hard over here, baby. So stop on by. Check out the funky grooves and shake your booty too.
Don't get in a too deep, brother. Don't get in a too heavy. Don't get so you can move a bottle whenever you get ready.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Friday, January 23rd, 2015. President Obama on Thursday said he expects more states to experiment with marijuana legalization, saying, quote, "The position of my administration has been that we still have federal laws that classify marijuana as an illegal substance, but we're not going to spend a lot of resources trying to turn back decisions that have been made at the state level on this issue. My suspicion is that you're going to see other states start to look at this," end quote. The president went on to discuss a number of issues related to federal application of drug policy. He said that he will continue to have his administration review treatment of nonviolent drug offenders and said drug policy with regard to marijuana should be treated more as a public health issue than a criminal one. He also voiced concern with the racially unequal application of marijuana laws and noted bipartisan support on the issue. Colorado's decision to legalize marijuana was a bad idea, the state's governor said today. Governor John Hickenlooper, a Democrat who opposed the 2012 decision by voters to make pot legal, said the state still doesn't fully know what the unintended consequences of the move will be. Quote, "If I could have waved a magic wand the day after the election, I would have reversed the decision and said this was a bad idea," end quote. Hickenlooper said Friday on CNBC's Squawk Box, continuing, quote, "You don't want to be the first person to do something like this," end quote. He said that he tells other governors to wait a couple of years before legalizing marijuana as Colorado continues to navigate an unknown, non-existent federal regulatory landscape for the industry. Quote, "There's a whole regulatory environment that really regulates alcohol," he said. "We're starting from scratch, and we don't have a federal partner because marijuana is still illegal federally," end quote. Lawmakers in Hawaii are beginning to introduce a series of bills that aim to make marijuana more freely available in the state. A bill to decriminalize marijuana is currently being drafted, said Senator Will Espero, chairman of the Public Safety Intergovernmental and Military Affairs Committee. That bill would reduce punishment for using marijuana to a civil violation instead of a felony, he said. Espero plans to introduce at least two other bills on the topic Friday. One bill, SB 190, would allow marijuana growers to serve 3 medical marijuana patients at a time instead of the current one-person limit. That's especially important for elderly patients who may not be able to cultivate a garden, he said. The bill also spells out how patients or caregivers can get seeds or plants. In the House, a bill was introduced Thursday to prohibit discrimination against medical marijuana users in condominiums. A young girl whose family has been leading the charge to expand Virginia's medical marijuana laws had a seizure at the General Assembly on Thursday. Northern Neck mother Lisa Smith thinks her daughter Haley should be permitted to use medical marijuana because the cannabis oil helped her daughter's seizures. Smith and Haley joined other families who went before a Senate committee to talk to lawmakers about expanding the state's current laws. Last year, Haley, who suffers from Dravet syndrome, had 1,200 seizures, about 400 more than she had in 2013. The Smiths weren't alone Thursday. They were joined by other families seeking the right to use medicinal marijuana, including the Collins from North Virginia. Jennifer Collins, age 15, suffers from seizures as well, and while she used medical marijuana when she lived in Colorado, she can't now that she is back in Virginia. Some lawmakers are concerned that the science isn't there yet to prove cannabis oil really works. Adams County, Colorado, received about 1,500 applications in less than 3 weeks from people interested in opening a marijuana business in unincorporated areas east of the Denver airport. The names of the first people allowed to apply will be randomly selected during a lottery drawing at 3 p.m. January 27th at the Adams County Government Center. The drawing will also stream live on the county's YouTube channel. Out of a pool of about 1,500, the county will select 3 retail stores, 3 grow facilities, 3 infused product manufacturing facilities, and 1 testing facility. The 10 selected applicants have 6 months after the drawing to get a state license, a building permit, and change of use permits for their business. Last year, Adams County voters approved recreational marijuana operations in unincorporated parts of the county, along with an additional 3% sales tax on all retail sales. This has been your 420 Radio News for Friday, January 23rd, 2015. I'm Russ Belville. 420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts.
The Green Cross has been an amazing source of cannabis medicines for my pain management. Whether I need edibles or tinctures or topicals, I'm able to combine the 2 or 3 to give me really successful pain control.
It's the delivery service that Green Cross provides is just incredible. You get your medicine and it's delivered by a person that you know you trust.
Whether we come to you or you come to us, the Green Cross delivers.
There's so much I worry about as a mom. Stephen Harper thinks that organized crime should continue to profit from marijuana prohibition. Imagine regulating marijuana like alcohol and cigarettes with a strong and clear educational message, making it more difficult for my kids and your kids to access. Drug dealers don't ask for ID. Stephen Harper does not have the kind of judgment we need to protect our children, authorized by the Normal Women's Alliance of Canada.
The International Cannabis Business Conference is coming to the Hyatt Regency Hotel in San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, 2015. Don't miss this exclusive opportunity to hear from the experts on the future of marijuana commerce, including scientists like Dr. Carl Hart, Dr. Amanda Ryman, and Dr. Stanton Peel, policy experts like Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance, Anthony Johnson from Oregon's Legalization Campaign, travel author Rick Steves from Washington's Legalization Campaign, and California legalization pioneer Dale Sky Jones. Business experts like Harborside's Steve D'Angelo, ArcView Group's Troy Dayton, and UFCW union leader Dan Rush. Cannabis journalists like Ricardo Baca, Steve Bloom, and Doug Fine, and California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, plus many, many more. Tickets are on sale now at internationalcbc.com, but hurry, last year's conference in Portland, Oregon was a sellout. International Cannabis Business Conference, San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, internationalcbc.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 after the hour, time for us to go behind the headlines. And today, I pick up out of the Seattle Times a post from the Associated Press that reads, pot-related poison control calls up in Washington and Colorado. Now, we've heard about these stories in the past. Every time there's some new number from the Poison Control Center showing an increase in marijuana overdoses, we get these alarmist headlines in the newspapers. And before I get too deeply into this, I want to address someone that corrected me on Twitter to say, there's no such thing as a marijuana overdose, silly. Well, folks, there is such a thing as a marijuana overdose. What people get confused about is typically overdose goes along with the word death. When you hear heroin overdose or alcohol overdose, it can also often mean death. Overdose does not always necessarily mean death. It just means taking more than you intended to and having a bad reaction from it. So there is indeed a marijuana overdose. In fact, I can testify there is such a thing. It has happened to me. I once took a mega dab in Los Angeles that overdosed me so bad I was laying in a street gutter, dry heaving my guts out. So I understand there is such a thing as a marijuana overdose, and it is not a pleasant thing to experience. It's not going to kill you. It'll wear off in an hour or two, but it's definitely not something that we would wish on anyone. So let's be serious about that as we discuss the issue that there is such a thing as a marijuana overdose, and it is something we want to avoid. We want people to not experience this and give marijuana legalization a bad name. Now, with that expressed, let's also express the fact that these headlines are alarmist because they ignore a very salient point, which is we do not know whether overdoses have increased. All we know is that the reporting of overdoses has increased. And one thing about this story in the Associated Press that has kind of given me some hope is it seems that that message is starting to make it to the mainstream. The first paragraph in this report talks about how marijuana-related calls to poison control centers in Washington and Colorado have spiked since they legalized. But in the next paragraph says, it's not clear how much of the increase might be related to more people using marijuana as opposed to people feeling more comfortable to report their problems now that the drug is legal. And that, I would argue, is a large reason for the increase that we are seeing. A large reason because in the past, if you were having a bad reaction to marijuana, the only person you could tell was your friend, and they would just tell you to ride it out. You wouldn't think to go to the hospital for fear that your possession or use of marijuana could land you with an arrest and a criminal record. So a large portion of this must be related to just increased comfort with reporting this, especially with respect to children, where parents might fear Child Protective Services for their use of illegal marijuana. They might not fear it so much when it comes to a legal marijuana state. That said, the numbers that we have show that in the Rocky Mountain Poison Control Center, they received 151 calls for marijuana exposure. That was up from 88 the year before and 61 in 2012. Now, keep in mind, in 2012, marijuana was illegal in Colorado for people without a red card. In 2013, it was legal, but there was no place to purchase it. And in 2014 is when purchases began. So seeing a rise from 88 during a legal regime to 151 after sales begin does lend some credence to the idea that this increased access to marijuana is leading to more over-ingestions. The secondary argument I would make after the increased reporting is that we are actually incentivizing some of these accidental marijuana overexposures by failing to give adults, especially those whose last experience with marijuana was smoking a joint in the dorm room 30 years ago, we are failing to give them a place to smoke marijuana. Public consumption of marijuana is illegal, and Denver and Colorado are not allowing for public use lounges, vapor lounges, coffee shops, whatever you want to call them. So when someone wants to try the newly legal marijuana and they're not allowed to be able to smoke it, the next thing they turn to is the edible, without realizing how even professional pot smokers like myself don't touch edibles without a lot of care and consideration. The fact is that marijuana metabolizes differently in the stomach than it does going through the lungs. Going through the lungs, we get delta-9 THC, the chemical we're all familiar with that gets you high. But through the stomach, it metabolizes into 11-hydroxy-THC, a substance that's 9 times more psychoactive. So even experienced smokers like myself will be very careful when it comes to edibles. We need to incentivize and provide ways for people to use the marijuana they're used to, the marijuana smoking or vaporization, where they can self-titrate that dose and know exactly how high they're going to get, rather than expecting to play Russian roulette with an edible they have very little experience with. These numbers call for more education, which is already taking place in Colorado with their campaigns to go slow and start low, and more explicit labeling and understanding and demonstration and explanation from the bud tenders on how to properly consume marijuana edibles. The solution to this is not lower dosage edibles. It is not bans on edibles. People will get around those. And as we've always learned, prohibition doesn't work. Let's turn to education. Let's turn to better information for the consumer, and we will see this level out.
That's just how white folks will do you.
You said it, Mr. President. So it's 4:20 in Denver, Colorado, 3:20 here in the Pacific time zone, and 1:20 in Hawaii?
Yeah, that's right.
1:20 in Hawaii, says Wiz Calico. He's with us for hour two. Stick around. We'll take your questions and talk a little bit about the Big Island and all the little other ones when we come back.
R20 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Funky Roller Ring.
Ooh, yeah.
What's happening, Groovy Cats? This is your Funk Master of Ceremonies, Big Daddy, and I want you to join me every Thursday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here at the Funky Roller Ring.
Ooh, yeah.
Your home of soul, funk, and disco, baby.
Funkylicious.
It's always a party at the Funky Roller Rink.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 and a half after the hour. In the data mine today, we get a great study coming out of the National Institutes of Drug Abuse reported from Washington University in St. Louis. And, you know, it's not often there's a NIDA study that I'm a fan of, but I really love this one because it underscores something that I have said for years now, at least a decade. When we're talking about it, we're winning. And I've made a point throughout all my lectures and demonstrations of expressing how the big change in the political culture in America with respect to marijuana legalization and acceptance of marijuana users has in large part to do with the advent of the internet and social media. I have for a long time argued that part of what kept us down was ignorance and fear and not knowing how many of us there were out there, feeling alone and segregated, the old divide and conquer strategy. But through Twitter and Facebook and all this instant messaging and blogs, people now are able to exchange information about their use of marijuana, their support for marijuana legalization, and their opposition for marijuana prohibition. That has built a cannabis community that is large and vibrant and understands exactly how large we really are and how much political power we actually wield. So in this study that was just posted on the 23rd, just posted today, it analyzed Twitter and the feeds of certain people on Twitter to find out how many pro-marijuana versus anti-marijuana tweets were given in a particular month. And what these researchers found is that 7.6 million tweets were sent between February 5th and March 5th of 2014. They searched using terms like joint, blunt, weed, stoner, bong, ganja, hemp, marijuana, whatever it might be, cannabis. And from that, they discovered more than 7.6 million tweets. And the good news about that, and the bad news for people like Kevin Sabet, is that there were 15 times as many pro-marijuana tweets as anti-marijuana tweets. Kevin, we're kicking your ass in cyberspace, buddy. Absolutely mopping the floor with you in social media. But it's to be expected, considering that we represent the future and the 21st century understanding of marijuana, and those folks are still stuck in the 20th century with their reefer madness prohibition ideas clunking away on some IBM Selectric typewriter somewhere. Other information about this study, who they were researching were the analysis of Twitter accounts that had more than 775 followers. So a decent Twitter following, and accounts that have a clout score of 44 and above. Clout score just measures how much social media influence you have. Like, how often do your tweets get retweeted and passed on? How many times are you referenced and so forth? For example, my @RadicalRuss account, we have over 13,000 followers and a clout score in the 70s. So we're doing pretty good there. Now, they examined a random sample of about 7,000 of these tweets, found that 77% were pro-marijuana, 5% were against, and 18% were neutral. So it's even worse than a 15-time ass-kicking for people like Kevin Sabet on Twitter. Only 1 out of 20 of the tweets were anti-marijuana. And, best of all, the reach of those tweets. People tweeting pro-marijuana messages had a total of more than 50 million Twitter followers. That's about 12 times more than the people pushing the anti-marijuana messages. Now, the concern for this, the researchers, Patricia A. Cavazos-Reg is her name. She said, quote, "It's a concern because frequent marijuana use can affect brain structures and interfere with cognitive function, emotional development, and academic performance." Once again, it's a case where researchers, when they go to NIDA to try to get money and approval for these studies, have to kind of point out they're trying to find something negative. The study has to be to try to prove something bad about marijuana, and they reach as far as they can to try to come up with a negative. The negative they're trying to push here is that most of those people sending and receiving marijuana tweets were under the age of 25, with many in their teens. And this is brought out by the researchers as being a very scary thing, because we know with more accepting messages and more exposure to marijuana messaging, teens and children are more likely to want to use marijuana, according to their theory. But what I think that severely ignores is the fact that A, marijuana users are already concentrated in the group 25 and below. The ages 18 to 25 features people that smoke marijuana. 1 out of 5 smoke annually. 1 out of 3 smoke annually. 1 out of 5 smoke monthly. So it's no surprise that we're going to see a big demographic bubble in the 18 to 25 age around marijuana smoking. And number two, when it comes to use of computers and social media tools, it again has a large demographic bulge toward the younger folks. So saying that we got a whole bunch of marijuana tweets coming from people under 25 is hardly surprising, when most of the people smoking marijuana are under age 25 and most of the people using Twitter tend to be younger people. So don't believe the hype on this particular study. Take the good out of this study, which is that our message is winning in cyberspace, and it's damn near impossible to get a negative message on marijuana across through the Twitter platform. It's a very, very friendly place to be if you're a cannabis consumer like me. 420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at
Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today, we look at the Wanna Green Rush in our Canna Business Chronicles.
Welcome back, everyone. Half past the hour. And joining us today on Canna Business Chronicles, we've got Steve Owens. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Adherence Colorado. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Russ.
Oh, so glad to have you here. And Adherence Colorado, of course, is dealing with all of the regulations that your marijuana enforcement division have promulgated for people involved in the marijuana industry. Give our listeners a thumbnail sketch of what your product is and how it fits into that regulation scheme.
Great. Essentially, what we do here is regulatory compliance audits in the Colorado market. We have an iPad app. It's a proprietary iPad app. Basically, if you go through a medical audit or a recreational audit, there's three different audit types. You have a store, a MIP, which is a infused producer. They create edibles, concentrates, things like that. And then we also have grows or cultivation centers. So we do all three audit types on the medical side and the retail side. And what we've done is take out of the Colorado Department of Revenue, the Marijuana Enforcement Division has guidelines, basically the regulatory code for medical and retail. It's about 500 pages for medical and about 500 pages for retail. Officially, it's titled the Permanent Rules Related to the Colorado Retail and Medical Marijuana Code. But what we've done is pull out every single requirement required by the state into a question form. So when we go to visit a medical store here in Denver, Colorado, we go in with the iPad app. There's over 300 questions per audit type, and we scrutinize every single compliance detail for that business. So we go through the iPad audit, answer all of the questions, over 300 questions. It takes about 3 to 4 hours in total. And then from there, we upload the results list to our Amazon web server. And it goes through my algorithm that I created. All of the questions are basically ranked, as far as the infraction detail, whether it's a violation, a citation, or a public health and safety issue. And then basically after it goes through the algorithm, it creates a detailed compliance report, which is an actionable list of all the infractions that you did not pass. And it also provides an adherence compliance score. And this is relatively new for the industry. And what this represents is risk, the underlying risk on that license. So, and the license is the privilege to sell, manufacture, or cultivate marijuana. So we're taking off here in Colorado, which is great because we kind of have a saying in our company, compliance is science. So it's taking off well here in Colorado, and we're really happy. Our clients are very happy, and we've been able to go in and take a snapshot at a facility, a store, a MIP, or a grow, and then we can tell you what the risk level of that facility is, that license premise.
It sounds like pretty comprehensive software in that it will function for both the recreational side and the medical side, and I assume it's scalable for different sizes of these businesses?
Absolutely. Yeah. We can go into, as we call them, a mom and pop shop that just has a medical store license and a medical grow license. We can provide a snapshot for them. We currently charge $500 per license. Or we go into some of our larger providers that have 16 to 18 licenses, and then we're able to provide an enterprise view, kind of a holistic view of the entire operation. So not only do you get a score, a compliance score and a list of infractions per license, you also get that enterprise view. So if you look at kind of enterprise risk management and that type of software, we're really the first providers in the cannabis industry for that.
Well, that's fantastic. It also sounds like when you described the upload process, that this would be a very almost real-time reaction. You wouldn't have to wait a whole
bunch of time to get your information and start doing due diligence on fixing those problems.
Absolutely. You get an actionable list of all of the items that you did not pass. We're very detail-oriented, so if we're on the fence on whether to give you the infraction or not, we pretty much will count the infraction against you, because what we want the license owners here in Colorado to be able to do is to have a list of everything that they got wrong. Our process, the Marijuana Enforcement Division, has seen our process here in Colorado. They're big fans of it so far. It's much, much more detailed than the audits that they go through, which is great. But yeah, we're able to take kind of a snapshot and make sure that these people can address that right away. And then you don't have to wait. We have a couple competitors in the market. It takes anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks to get your results back. And in the meantime, the MED can come through and close you down. So what we're able to do is to provide immediate results through the use of our iPad app and the software that we've created.
That's fantastic. And we're speaking with Steve Owens. He's the CEO from Adherence Colorado. You can learn more about the software at adherence-colorado.com. And looking at your website, it also mentions that your inventory audits match a lot of the requirements for not just the state, but also other types of software out there. So as far as being compliant with or being able to interface with other software, can you give us some details on that?
Yeah, we work with all the major POS providers, BioTrack, MJ Freeway, MMJ Menu, and then basically our consulting services side of the house. We go in and with the state of Colorado, you have the metric system. It's the marijuana enforcement tracking reporting system that they have here that the state uses. So you'll have a business that uses BioTrack for their point of sale. And they're basically doing the inventory and everything through BioTrack, but they're required every day to reconcile that sales system with the mandated state of Colorado tracking system, which is metric. A lot of times they run into issues, either with the upload file or what have you, or it could be knowledge transfer or the knowledge base, if you will, of the bud tender or whoever's loading the inventory. So if the state system does not match the POS system, then there's issues. You're not reconciling your inventory daily, which is required by law. And then also, if you're paying taxes, excise tax, et cetera, on the, you know, the recreational side, et cetera, basically your taxes will not, the taxes for the business will not be correct, because you're basically reporting taxes out of the point of sale system versus the state mandated system there. So our consultants will go in and do daily and monthly reconciliation, and then make sure that you're compliant on the inventory basis as well. So one is a compliance, a regulatory compliance, it's a snapshot, if you will, of the license premise, the people, the process, and technology. And then the other service that we offer is the inventory reconciliation process improvement. We develop standard operating procedures, operations guides for our clients to let them effectively manage their inventory, because at the end of the day, the inventory is their revenue stream and their value chain. And unless they have that locked down and make sure that there's no theft, there's no leakage and things like that, they're not maximizing their revenue.
This is Adherence Colorado. We're talking about inventory audits. We're talking about regulatory audits and consulting services for the recreational and medical systems going on in Colorado. And Steve, I'm curious. I'm here in Oregon, where we'll be developing a recreational marijuana system that opens in 2016. Of course, Washington, they're still trying to put together how their systems are going to be regulated. Are you looking to expand, and have you expanded to the other legal states?
Right now we're in Colorado, but yes, we are expanding to Washington. Washington has the marijuana traceability system, which is the BioTrack software. So they basically utilize that in the state of Washington. And then we're opening an office there probably within the next few weeks, and then start to provide our services in Washington. We have a lot of expertise in the BioTrack system. We think it's best of breed, so we'll be expanding there. We're also opening up in Oregon, Arizona, Nevada, Illinois. So those are our next logical steps that we're opening with. So we're going to be expanding to a nationwide delivery system to provide our services for folks in the cannabis industry.
Another consideration I imagine some licensees might have would have to do with privacy, encryption, and subpoena ability of some of this data. What can you tell us with regards to those?
At this point, we haven't run into that. With our clients here in Colorado, we essentially work for the client. We'll sign an NDA, confidentiality agreement with the client. We will only work with the Marijuana Enforcement Division if the client directs us to on their behalf. With a couple of our clients here in Colorado, we actively work with the MED, and we kind of facilitate the relationship between the client and the MED. For some of our clients who have gotten into a little bit of trouble managing their inventory, reconciliation and that type of stuff, and have fallen behind in getting the metric system updated here in Colorado, we've been able to go in there and provide our services to help them get back on track, and then work with that and make sure that the state agency is up to speed on everything and transparent. But again, we only work with the enforcement division at the behest of the client. And then we haven't been in any kind of issue where, you know, legal issues have happened or anything like that as far as subpoenas or anything like that.
Okay. So. What about the issue of cybersecurity? You know, Sony Pictures got hacked for making a movie about assassinating Kim Jong-il or Un or whichever one's in power. You're transmitting back and forth all of this data. How is it protected?
We have encrypted APIs. So basically the APIs are authenticated between the iPad app and our Amazon web server. Amazon has best of breed cloud-based technology with their AWS platform. So basically that's locked down as well. And then we have a secure web portal which basically displays the results. If the client would like, we can go ahead and provide the detailed compliance report and the compliance score, if you will, via PDF. So they can use that kind of on a distribution basis with their staff and stuff like that. But yeah, we've thought of security in advance and then we make sure that it's all locked down. And then, yeah, we use best-of-breed Amazon server technology. It's a private cloud. Nobody has access to it other than us.
All right. Fantastic news on that front. We're speaking with Steve Owens, the CEO of Adherence Colorado. They're at adherence-colorado.com. And we've got about a minute left, Steve, so I'd like to give you the last word. If there's any contact information, websites, anything else you'd like to promote about the brand.
Sure. Yes, we are at www.adherence-colorado.com. We also have our Washington site up at this point, which would be adherence-washington.com. Right now in Colorado, we're running a special. It's $500 per license audit. So that's basically going through March 31st. We've got a couple strategic partnerships that we're going to be announcing as early as next week. Keep your ears out for that. We're pretty excited about some of the partnerships we have in the industry. And then we're also starting to work with the banking industry. The banking industry has looked at our compliance score, and it basically presents risk on the underlying license, which is the privilege to execute in this market. So the banks are very interested in what we're doing. And then hopefully the banking industry will open up a little bit here to provide the services in the cannabis industry. Right now, because of the Cole memo and things like that, they're unable to.
All right. Well, Adherence Colorado sounds like a great piece of software and consulting services for folks out there that want to make sure they are complying with the emerging regulations on marijuana legalization in this country. Steve Owens, the CEO, thank you so much for joining us here in Cannabis Chronicles, and good luck with everything.
Thank you much, Russ.
All right. Stay tuned. We've got the anti-drug public service announcement of the day coming up next, and then the radical rant. 9 bills on marijuana legalization issues before the Oregon legislature. We'll give you the tip of the hat, the wag of the finger, since Stephen Colbert's not using it anymore. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
About 68% of all medically necessary drug treatment admissions for youth aged 12 to 17 are for marijuana. Marijuana, it's harmful to youth.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
And one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 46 after the hour, and today I got news of the first bills to be dropped in front of the Joint Committee for implementation of Measure 91. Of course, you know, Joint Committee means it's House and Senate. It doesn't mean they're rolling doobies. Although, you know, I'm not against them doing so. The Joint Committee is comprised of 10 members, 6 Democrats, 4 Republicans, and co-chaired by Senator Ginny Burdick. She's a Democrat out of Portland. And I forget who the other co-chair is, but you can look it up. I've posted in the chat room the link to the Oregon legislative site that has all this information. We've got 9 bills before us right now to alter or amend the medical marijuana program or the newly passed Measure 91. And a very simple way to understand what to support and what to reject: reject the House bills, support the Senate bills. It's as simple as that. Everything I've seen so far coming out of the House is a stinker. And everything I've seen coming out of the Senate so far sounds pretty good. Let's take a look at these bills. House Bill 2033 is a bill to direct the State Board of Pharmacy to classify any synthetically manufactured cannabinoid as a controlled substance in Schedule 1. Now, the synthetic cannabinoids, you know, the JWH-018 and the 223s and all these JWHs, are the constituents that are sprayed on artificial herbs, you know, the fake pot, the synthetic pot, the K2, the spice. And I believe this kind of bill is motivated by that scare, this fear of the synthetic marijuana, the fake pot that's out there that people use to get past drug tests and to use when marijuana is not legal. This bill is certainly not necessary, as now that the real thing is legal, there is far less incentive to want to be using any of these artificial marijuanas. But also for the fact that this is a bill that is trying to address the problem of, if you name a particular chemical in a schedule, all that they have to do is tweak a molecule here or there, make it a different chemical, and now it's not scheduled. And they're trying to get ahead of that by saying anything in the cannabinoid class, no matter how you tweak the molecule, is going to be Schedule 1. And the problem with that is that these synthetic cannabinoids were specifically designed for medical and scientific research. The whole point of them was to be able to study the effect of cannabinoids, since marijuana was Schedule 1 and they couldn't get a hold of that. So making all the synthetics Schedule 1 just puts further roadblocks in front of the legitimate scientists and researchers who are studying the effect of cannabinoids on the human body. So we would reject this out of hand. There's no need. If you want to set something up like this, it would be more appropriate to automatically classify these things as Schedule 2. A Schedule 2 drug is still considered a dangerous drug of abuse that can't be had without prescription and has severe criminal penalties for its misuse. Think methamphetamine or cocaine. They're Schedule 2. Drop the synthetic cannabinoids in Schedule 2, and the researchers will still be able to do research with them. But you put them in Schedule 1, and they're hands off for everyone. The next couple of bills are the worst marijuana bills I've ever seen. Okay, that may not be true, but they're the worst I've seen this year. House Bill 2040 and 2041, one would absolutely prohibit and the other one would allow cities to vote to prohibit medical marijuana facilities and licensed producers, processors, and sellers of marijuana from being located within 1 mile of a school. 1 mile halo around any school where there could not be any marijuana commerce. Now, I already produced a graphic on this where I showed a 1 mile radius from just one school in Portland, Oregon, Lincoln High School. You put a 1 mile barrier around that one school and there is no marijuana sales anywhere in the Portland downtown, Old Town, Pearl District, or South Waterfront. Basically, everything in the skyscraper area of Portland, there'd be no pot sales. Now, I can't begin to count how many open alcohol venues there are within a mile of Lincoln High School. Not just places you can go in and buy a beer or have a drink, but patios where adults are drinking alcohol openly in front of the children. Now, it's bad enough that they want to put 1,000-foot restrictions on us, but a 1 mile restriction is completely untenable and would, in a sense, essentially just ban marijuana in any city. Now, HB House Bill 2147 directs the Department of Revenue to conduct a study on the taxation of marijuana. This is a good idea for 2008. Look, we already decided how we're going to tax marijuana in Measure 91. $35 an ounce at the grow. Let's let that run for a while. Let's see what happens when we tax marijuana at the lowest per weight tax in the nation, or for that matter, the world. Let's see how that works out. If it's not adequately funding the resources we expect it to fund, the schools and the drug treatments and so on, if it's not working, then you form a study committee to try to find a better solution. What this looks like to me is just a backdoor way for them to ignore the will of the people who voted for a $35 an ounce tax by putting the impetus of some study behind it that says, who knows, a sales tax or something would work. And the last House bill, HB 2676, directs the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to register medical marijuana facilities and patients and all that. Basically, it's a wholesale transfer and rewrite of the medical marijuana laws to turn it over to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission instead of the Oregon Health Authority. Now, look, you know my stance on this. I'd prefer we just integrate the whole thing. Let's have one system where marijuana is grown and processed and transported and sold. And then you can have medical marijuana cards that give tax breaks or allow greater limits or whatever. But let's have one commercial system for marijuana. But if that's not the case, if they are going to remain one separate system for recreational and a separate system for medical, then by God, that medical system should remain under the Oregon Health Authority's auspices. Now, we move from the bad to the good. SB 460, Senate Bill 460, is rules providing for relocation of registered medical marijuana facilities if a school is established within 1,000 feet. Now, the scenario here that we're dealing with is you go and try to find a place to locate your dispensary. And you have to find a place that's not zoned residential, and you have to find a place that's 1,000 feet away from schools and 1,000 feet away from other dispensaries. You finally find your spot, you set up your shop, and then months later, a school moves in next door. You've got to shut down because you can't be within 1,000 feet of a school. What this bill would do is provide a timetable so that if that is to occur, if a school does move in next to an existing facility, it has some time to be able to relocate and take its license to another location farther away from that school. Now, personally, I would prefer that the schools have to do the same sort of location judgments as the dispensaries do. That is, a school should have to determine what's 1,000 feet away from a dispensary and set up there. The rules should work equally both ways. But politically speaking, people are going to be more sympathetic to schools than they are dispensaries. So if the choice is shut it down or give us a timetable to relocate, we'll take the latter. Next is Senate Bill 464. This would prohibit patients from processing extracts unless certified by the Oregon Health Authority. Measure 91 banned home production of concentrates using solvents. And for the definition, solvent does not include glycerin or water or carbon dioxide or alcohol, grain alcohol. We're talking about BHO and PHO, propane hash oil. And there currently exists kind of a loophole that doesn't apply to medical marijuana patients. This bill would close that loophole. And I say that's a good thing, because what is it about being sick that makes you any safer at home blasting BHO? If the people voted to ban home blasting, there shouldn't be an exception just because you're sick. Now, I would prefer this would be amended to provide some manner by which someone could register to be a home producer merely for personal or medical use, not for sale. There are ways of producing this stuff safely. You can buy closed loop systems that don't let gas escape. Or maybe you've got a property that's way the hell out in Eastern Oregon, far away from everyone, and you've got enough open air location to be able to blast safely. There ought to be a way to get that certified. But I'm thinking we are better safe than sorry in this circumstance. So let's go forth with this and work that pathway out sometime in the future. Then we have House Bills 479 and 480. These are a couple of bills. One of them is to begin a study of medical marijuana and its patients to determine what's working for medical marijuana patients, what they prefer in their medical marijuana facilities, and so forth. And another bill is to establish a permanent commission for the study of clinical uses of cannabis. Wow, folks. Only 16 years later, and we're going to start asking medical marijuana patients how it's working for them. Well, you know, better late than never, I suppose. But come on, this should have been passed in 2000, not 2015, for God's sake. Finally going to ask the patients how it's working for them. All right, so that's the list of bills. If you want to find out more information about this, it's available. We put the link in the chat room, but you can also check the Portland Normal Facebook page, facebook.com/Portland Normal. We've got that entire review up and available for you. And it does remind me that starting in February, Toker Talk Radio won't be heard live because on Wednesdays, I should say, because Wednesdays is the day that this committee will be meeting in Salem, and I'll have to take off early and drive down there to Salem. So starting in February, Toker Talk Radio on Wednesdays will be a replay because I'll be busy getting my politics on. Also, if you check that link at the OLIS, you'll be able to find the list of the committee members, the 6 Democrats and the 4 Republicans on that committee. Their email addresses are also available. So if you're concerned about any of these bills, you'll be able to make your wishes known to those committee members. I'll also be, you know, testifying for that committee and providing some educational materials for them as well. Those are the first 9 bills that we've heard about. I'm sure there will be many more bills that will be produced as we go through this next 5-month process of crafting the marijuana regulations in the state of Oregon. Many concerns still exist, including whether or not there should be any sort of merging of the two systems. There are other considerations with respect to medical marijuana and how it should be registered. I heard one option that was being discussed as to whether or not medical marijuana facilities and pot shops, if they're open, if they're both going to be open, would the medical marijuana facilities open up to allow anyone to shop at them? And I just found that to be a silly suggestion. I mean, we're just more and more underscoring the fact that there's no difference between the marijuana that's being sold to these two different groups. It's already in stark relief as it is with our dispensaries where many recreational consumers are shopping at them. Folks, a jar of AK-47 is the same jar of AK-47, whether or not you're buying it at the dispensary or you're buying it at the pot shop. Well, folks, that's all the time we've got for today. Hour one. Stay tuned for hour two. Toker Talk Radio is coming up next, and our special guest in studio, we got Wiz Khalifa, who's just back from Hawaii. Aloha.
Aloha to everyone out there.
Very, very nice.
Excited to be back.
Hi in Hawaii is in our chat room as well, so I'm sure I'll have some Hawaii-related questions for you.
It's going to be fun. Stick around.
All right, folks. For everyone here at 420radio.org, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Please, you can.